We've got guests, Ethan, Rowan, David, Josh. We've got things to talk about. Kawhi to Toronto. What superstars are left for the Heat? Dwayne Wade's plans for retirement and Pat Riley's plans for the roster. This is Heating Up, a Locked On Heat game show where the best takes win. Let's go. Let's start in Toronto, where the Raptors traded DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a highly protected first-round pick to the Spurs for Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard. The Kawhi saga is done, for now, until he enters free agency next summer. We've got Ethan Skolnick, founder of the Five Reasons Sports Network, on here. Ethan, were the Heat ever a realistic destination for Kawhi Leonard?
You know, I thought at first they could be, and I do think that they had some assets that would have been interesting to San Antonio. And we actually did this on our pod, and the question was kind of how many assets would you give up for Kawhi? And I said four. And of the four, I'm saying of the six assets I thought they had, which were Dragic, the three young guys, and their next two first-round picks, that I would have given up four of those assets to get Kawhi. But one of the things that I did hear, talking to some people related to the organization, is they were not comfortable with the people around Kawhi, that they were having difficulty sort of gauging where his head was at, dealing with some of the people in that group. And so if they were getting a sense that they didn't think he was going to return after playing the 1 year in Miami, then I can understand why they wouldn't want to give up everything for him. Even though, again, the thing that Pat Riley is best at is convincing guys to stay in Miami. So I understand why they didn't go all in for it. They didn't have a player of DeRozan's quality, but I think with Dragic and some of the young players, they could have made a competitive offer.
Rowan Ed Carney of Sports Illustrated's The Crossover is here. Rowan, is it more that the Heat didn't even want to put the assets out there for Kawhi? Would you have been comfortable with that?
I don't know if I would have been comfortable with it. Kind of echoing what Ethan said, something I've heard kind of through the grapevine is just, you know, the people around Kawhi, I think, kind of want to have the control of an organization, similar to the way, you know, maybe Rich Paul had a lot of influence in Cleveland. And I just don't think the Heat kind of want to go through an experience like that again. Obviously, they were willing to put up with it for LeBron, but that was also LeBron coming, you know, on a four-year contract, or I believe it might have even been a six-year at the time with the opt-outs or whatever. I don't think they're willing to put up with an experience like that for, you know, 1 year of Kawhi when there's such an indication that he wants to move to Los Angeles. So in that sense, I don't know if it would have been worth giving up the assets for Kawhi, because, you know, then you're also entering a situation kind of what you saw like Carmelo Anthony with the Knicks. You're giving up all these players for someone. Does it really make you a contender? I think the Heat would have had a decent team. Obviously, with Kawhi, he's that good by himself. But would they have been a contender? Would they have been able to build a contender in the next couple of years while the Warriors are still this good? I don't know. So I think the Heat, their best bet is still kind of a wait-and-see, ride-it-out approach.
We've also got Josh Eberle, writer at Hoop Mag. Josh, does this – so obviously – you live in Canada. You're following Toronto, obviously, as well as the rest of the league. Does this make Toronto a contender? Because Rowan says it wouldn't have made Miami a contender.
Yeah, I think it does make them a contender. You got to remember, Miami and Toronto are starting at different places. You know, Toronto was the number one seed in the conference. You know, they won 59 games. They're bringing in a guy that, if he's focused and healthy, granted neither is a given right now, who upgrades them at both ends of the ball. He spaces the floor better for Kyle Lowry. He's an outright better offensive player. He's the best defensive perimeter player in the league. This is a Raptors team where if everything goes right, you want to talk floors and ceiling, you know, possibilities. You know, they could easily be the best team in the conference. Unfortunately, you're also getting a big bag of risk, which is why I think, you know, my two fellow competitors here were hesitant from the Miami side to pull the trigger.
David Ramil, my co-host at Locked On Heat. David, should the Heat have given up more for Kawhi? It's a rare superstar that's on the market.
I don't think so. I mean, I've been a longtime proponent that Miami should run back the team as it's currently constructed. I think it's a great group, and I know that you've talked in the past about trying to acquire a superstar, and clearly that's how Miami's always been built, or at least during Riley's 20-some years here as the head of basketball operations. But at the same time, I don't know that you should give up, you know, echoing what Ethan said, too much in order to acquire a player who's going to be in a limited time frame there, and you're not quite sure what kind of a player you're getting. But, you know, we're all looking at it from Miami's perspective, whether or not they should have acquired Kawhi. But Kawhi clearly doesn't seem interested in playing anywhere other than Los Angeles. I mean, he didn't want to play in San Antonio, and we're hearing reports that he's not happy about having been traded to Toronto. I think we should take into consideration that he's pretty set in his ways as to where he wants to play, at least him and his representatives both.
Ethan, you mentioned the fact that Pat Riley is best at convincing guys to stay in Miami. Kawhi Leonard, not Kawhi Leonard, whomever, do you think there's been some criticism of Pat Riley lately for just failing at a lot of these superstar potential acquisitions? Do you see that as a failing on Pat Riley's part?
I don't blame him for the guys he hasn't gotten over the past couple of years. I blame him for the way he paid the guys who were already on the roster. I'm not going to kill him for not getting Kevin Durant in 2016. Was Kevin Durant going to join a Miami Heat team that didn't know if they were bringing Dwayne Wade back and didn't have another star on the roster, or was he going to join a 73-win team? I mean, that's just not a fair fight. Last year, Gordon Hayward, I heard that was the best pitch that the Heat ever made to a player, and Eric Spoelstra is the one who put that together. And that was not going to be enough because he wanted to play for his college coach. And so I understand that. So I'm not going to kill him for that either. The problem with what Pat Riley's done the past 2 years is he has gone against what made him great. The thing you want from Pat Riley, the only reason to have him running the organization at this point, when you have smart guys like Andy and Shane and Nick and others in the organization, and Spo taking more of a role, is because you want Pat being in the room with these guys, selling them on Miami, selling them on the program, and he took himself out of the room with what he did last summer. You know, we can talk about Hassan. At the time, you wanted to keep the asset. I wrote at the time that I understood why they did that. The Tyler move, obviously, I wouldn't have made. But I have no understanding of what they did last summer with Deion Waiters and James Johnson. There was no competition out there that was going to give those guys 4 years. There was no need to give them 4 years. And that gets beyond the fact that Deion wasn't even healthy. So to me, Pat Riley had his worst summer. And I covered the team for 20 years. The worst summer that I can remember Pat Riley having was last summer. And it's because he went against what Pat Riley did. We've seen Magic Johnson has gone to the Pat Riley playbook, and Pat Riley last summer forgot the Pat Riley playbook.
I don't blame Riley either for not going after Kawhi. Look, the people around him, I understand not being comfortable with that, like Rowan was talking about there. And then he might not even be healthy. We'll see. It made sense from a Toronto perspective. I love the deal for the Raptors, but it just never made sense for the Heat. Now I've got to name a winner of the round. Ethan, you came to the table with insider information, 20 years of reporting and everything else. So I'm going to name you the winner of that first round. Everybody else has to step up.
He's heating up. Talk about a fight. Come on.
With local podcast awards winner. It's a local media member. Rigged.
This won't hold up, I promise.
With Kawhi now off the board, is there a superstar that the Heat should have their eye on, and what should they be willing to give up for that sort of player? David, let's start with you.
Well, I think the clear answer here is Jimmy Butler. He's somebody that's on everybody's radar, I think, at least from Heat fandom. His on-the-court impact is undeniable. His two-way versatility makes him an ideal fit on Miami's roster. He gives them that superstar presence that they're currently lacking. But there's also his tireless devotion to the work. He seems perfect for what you call Heat culture. He's built himself up to this level where he's at now. But there's also this connection to Dwayne Wade. And perhaps more importantly, there's his status as an all-star and as an Olympian that connects him to other greats around the league. What we've lost with Dwayne Wade recently is that ability to recruit other players to this franchise. With Butler, you get that back. So he's not the only superstar that makes you a title contender, but those relationships with others around the league gets your foot in the door better than anything else Miami has to offer right now. So as far as what they should be willing to offer, I think a combination of Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow on a first-round pick should do it. But if they're looking for a little bit more, I say Pat Riley throws it all in there, because this might be your best last chance before Riley retires and goes off into those Malibu sunsets.
Rowan?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, having recently been to Malibu, those sunsets are incredible, and I don't know what Riley is waiting for. In terms of basketball, I will say that, you know, I don't know that they need to be looking to make a big move immediately. I would kind of have my eye on someone like Anthony Davis or Giannis, more so when they become free agents. I just don't know if the Heat, you know, let's say they bring someone like Jimmy Butler in, are you going to surround him with, you know, Deion and James Johnson? I just don't know that they're really going to be able to construct the right roster with the contracts they have right now, with Hassan as well. If I'm the Heat, I'm kind of keeping my eye on the summer of 2020, the summer of 2021. I want to keep guys like Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow. Those are the guys I want around my superstar more than anyone else. So I'm kind of looking at, you know, a little bit more longer into the future, wait for some of these bigger, even bigger names to be free agents, the true, you know, franchise-changing superstars, clear the decks for them, and say, hey, we have young guys, we have cap space, we're going to put together a great team around you, and the Warriors are going to be on the downswing. So if I'm the Heat, as much as it hurts to say as a fan, I'm taking an even longer view of things.
Ethan?
Yeah, I'm with Rowan on this. And to me, the target should be Giannis. It shouldn't be Butler or Kyrie in the interim. You know, you look at Giannis's situation, he's going to be 26 years old in 2021. I mean, basically, he's going to be about the same age that LeBron came to Miami. Miami is an international city. I think that will appeal to him. I don't know that the Bucks are going to be able to construct, you know, a champion-type team around him, although you can argue right now that Giannis and Kawhi are the two best players in the Eastern Conference. But I don't know that the Bucks are going to be able to put enough around him in Milwaukee. And I think at that point, you can make the case to him, look, we did this before, we can do it again. Now, the question will be who's running the Heat at that point. I mean, it's, you know, we're 3 years out now. I mean, it may be Shane Battier and Eric Spoelstra running the Heat. And so, you know, maybe they're the ones making the case to Giannis. But to me, that would be the target. Kyrie worries me. You know, I covered Kyrie for a year up in Cleveland. Kyrie has a lot of involvement from his family. It's kind of a similar situation in some ways to Kawhi. He's kind of a difficult personality in the locker room at times. I mean, when I got up to Cleveland that first year, nobody in the Cleveland locker room had his phone number. I don't know if he's a build around guy, honestly. I think Giannis's personality would fit better in Miami. That would be the target. So I think you just, at this point, you try to trade Tyler and Hassan maybe at the trade deadline or next year. And then you kind of, if you can't, you just wait until the contracts expire, and then you look at 2021.
So we've got Anthony Davis, we got Giannis on board as targets, but that years and years away. Josh, what do you think the Heat should do?
Yeah, I think Rowan and Ethan are on it with Giannis. I think Giannis is the guy everyone's going to want, but they're not getting him unless they get somebody else first. You know, what have we seen over the last 10 years with stars teaming up that makes you think Giannis is walking to Miami, you know, with nobody else there? You know, he's going to be a free agent in 2021. That just so happens to be when the Heat books really, really clear up. I think you make a move for Kyrie Irving now. I think he's a guy that's respected around the league. You know, they love him. Players love players who can get their own shot, you know, who do the fancy things, who have won on the big stage. Kyrie Irving had Miami on his list of teams when he wanted to be traded from Cleveland. I think Boston is worried, or Danny Ainge is at least thinking about Kyrie leaving in the offseason. There might be an opportunity to get him at a lesser value here, maybe even move a contract you don't like if you're giving some of those younger pieces. I would 110% move for Kyrie or Butler in the hopes of landing Giannis down the road.
I've got to agree. I think, you know, look, Rowan, Ethan, Anthony Davis and Giannis would be great. That's everybody's going to want those guys. I think that they've got to get a guy like Jimmy Butler, like David said, or Kyrie Irving, like Josh Eberle just said. And they've got to get that first before that's even an option. I don't know that either like a Bam Adebayo or Justice Winslow, as much as I love them, are the sort of guys that are going to be able to attract star free agents like Anthony Davis and Giannis. I've got to give the points to Josh there, and we'll play a game of true or false after this break.
So Wes just gives the points to the guy who agrees with him now?
That's exactly what happens. You're not, Rowan, this is not the first time you've been on the show. Back on Heating Up, while in China a few days ago, Dwayne Wade signed a lifetime deal with Li-Ning, the Chinese company he signed a shoe and apparel deal with back in 2012. Wade is launching his seventh signature Way of Wade shoe this year. True or false, Roman, this will be the last time in which Wade goes to China and plays for the Heat in the same year. In other words, do you think he retires?
Okay, I love the way you phrase that question. I'm going to go with false. I think he's coming back for one more year. This is just based on intuition more than anything else. Dwayne Wade has worked out so much this summer and posted so many videos of himself working out. He doesn't strike me as the type of person who's going to be religiously hitting the gym once he retires. I'm not saying, you know, he's going to balloon or anything like that, but I mean, we saw what happened that one year in Cleveland, right?
He likes pancakes.
The best shape, exactly. Just the fact that he's working out as hard as he is lends me to believe that he's coming back for one last season.
David?
I got to disagree. I think he's trying to keep the option open at least. So he's going to work out knowing the kind of regime that Miami has in place and what they're going to be asking him. You know, not everybody can access the cast iron skillet as easily as you can, Rowan. So I think he's going to want to do whatever he can to keep in shape and, you know, give himself that option. But the kind of post that he's put over the last couple of months there with UD traveling around, it strikes me as the kind of man who's ready to move on and walk off into the sunset. He's accomplished everything he possibly possibly could. What's the point of him coming back and trying to share this backcourt with Deion Waiters, Tyler Johnson, and Goran Dragic? There's just nothing left for him to prove. He's not going to join a contender. He wants to stay in Miami. He already had that comeback last year and the feel-good vibes that it brought with him. I don't know why he'd want to re-sign for another year of trying to contend for a playoff spot.
I understand, and I appreciate you having the integrity to speak the truth, but you know damn well that you're not getting any points for this now that you said that Wade's retiring. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't seem to have the same handle on the Dwayne Wade Instagram videos that the rest of this chat does, so I feel I'm at a small disadvantage, but I don't think he's coming back either. Like, if he is, he might go that Michael Beasley route or maybe even the Ray Allen route where he, like, talks about it and, you know, he's weighing his options and he wrings his hands because he doesn't want to play the full season. I thought, you know, Wade was on the way out for a couple years here, but he just seems to have these moments where he can still play. And I know as a player, it must be hard to walk away, you know, when you have some of the playoff showings he's had over the last couple years. But honestly, at this point in his career, I think it's an excellent point. Like, the Heat have moved on. They're trying to do new things. They've got young guys in their backcourt. I don't think he fits there, and I think he's ready for something new.
Ethan, you've covered Dwayne Wade for a long time. What's your sense of the situation?
Well, the sense that I get is that he was waiting it out to see what happened with the roster. The two things that I've heard were, A, were they going to be able to clean out the two-guard situation? Because right now they have five on the team without him after re-signing Ellington, since Riley said correctly that Josh Richardson is really a two. So, you know, and we talk about the skill sets being very similar between Deion and Dwayne. The two of them cannot play together, in my opinion. Like, that would be a total disaster. So I what I'd heard was he was waiting that out. I also did hear that there was a money thing involved here, and we know that there tend to be money things involved with Dwayne and the Heat, and the Heat just don't have any flexibility in that regard. So unless Dwayne was willing to pack up and move to Los Angeles, and he's been there and done that with LeBron, so I don't think he does that again, and I don't think the Lakers are ready to contend at this stage. I get the sense he's sort of waiting it out. I mean, he hasn't taken any visits. As you said, he's gone overseas. So usually with him, I have some inside information. This time I don't have any. I just have a sense that he's, you know, sort of was waiting to see what the Heat were doing. And I had heard that the Heat thought they could have a deal for Tyler Johnson at the very least. And there's one team out there still that has money, and that's the Kings. And if they're the only team with money, they have about $19 million. And they struck out on Zach LaVine. They struck out on Marcus Smart. And that $19 million, Tyler Johnson fits snugly into that. So I still think there's a possibility of them basically taking Tyler, then he becomes an expiring contract, maybe the Heat give up a couple of protected second-round picks or something along those lines in cash, and maybe a deal is done. And I think if that deal is done, I think you likely would see Dwayne come back. I don't see him right now being eager to commit himself to a team that has 5-2 guards when he believes in his heart that he's better than all of them, but I don't know where the minutes are going to come from.
So we've got Rowan saying that based on his Instagram, he thinks he's coming back. David says he retires. Josh says he retires. Ethan, that was, I'm not really sure where we ended up on your answer, but it was sounded very negative, and it kind of sounded like he needed to trade Tyler Johnson to Sacramento. So I'm going to give the points to Rowan because I use the same information he does with Instagram. Speaking of Heat guards, Miami has indeed re-signed Wayne Ellington, saying the hell with the luxury tax in order to bring him back. Now, in a recent interview for Heat.com, Josh Richardson said that bringing Ellington back will be huge for the Heat. Quote, when you got a guy who you can run the offense through 24 feet away from the goal, that's a luxury not a lot of teams have. End quote. Josh, is it true that paying the luxury tax is worth that kind of luxury?
Well, I mean, if we're having the conversation as we seem to every day about, you know, players and owners and agency and, you know, who cares if the owner pays a little bit more money? Yeah, why not? I mean, Wayne Ellington was a good player. He's a contributor to this team. I think Josh Richardson is the most valuable piece on this Heat team going forward. And if he likes Wayne Ellington, just the fact that that helps your relationship with Richardson, keeps him happy, I think that's a win. I don't know where this Heat team's going next year. You know, probably a back-end playoff spot would be, I guess, where most people peg them. But Wayne is part of that. And as you mentioned, you know, whether they bring back Dwayne Wade or they don't, or Deion Waiters is healthy, you know, they need the shooting. So I think bringing Wayne back was the right idea. And I'm actually surprised no one threw more money at him.
Ethan?
Yeah, I don't care how much luxury tax they pay. To be honest, like, that's where I come down on this. Like, it's not my money, and if the Heat had been more willing to go deeper into the tax, they might still have LeBron. So, to me, you know, if you can get a valuable piece for 1 year at $6.3 million, like, I was waiting for the 4 years 50 contract on Wayne Ellington. So, 1 year at six, to me, it's a great deal. I thought he could potentially get between $8 and $10 million somewhere else, maybe over 2 or 3 years. So to me, it's a terrific deal. He's a good locker room guy. The players like him. They run a lot of their offense through him. So, I mean, he's very valuable in that end. Now, the problem is he kind of got schemed off the floor because defensively he was having trouble getting around screens against Philadelphia. But, again, even as a situational player, that's what they should be paying guys like that, not what they paid Tyler Johnson, Deion Waiters, and James Johnson. Like, for role guys who are valuable role guys, you get them for a year at 6'3", absolutely.
Rowan, my fellow social media sleuth, I know you've seen James Johnson posting pictures with Wayne Ellington. Are you happy about the decision?
Yeah, absolutely. I like the move. I mean, you know, I wish they would have been this willing to pay the tax when, you know, they were deciding whether or not to amnesty Mike Miller. But like Ethan said, it's a great contract. I mean, his shooting is so good. He was, you know, I believe second in three-pointers made last year, the most off the bench. He was incredible. If anything, it worries me how reliant the Heat were on Wayne Ellington last season and how important he was to their offense. It's a little scary to think about how much they needed him and how integral he was to their best lineups. But shooting is at such a premium in the league. I'm shocked that a team like the Lakers didn't try to scoop him up. I'd much rather have someone like Wayne Ellington than Lance Stephenson at this point, just because of, you know, what he can do. So I think it's a really good move for the Heat. Again, the luxury tax thing is stupid. That, you know, if Mickey Arison pays $500 million for this team, it doesn't matter to me. You know, the owners can afford whatever, so I think it's a good move.
David?
Yeah, I have to agree. Look, I mean, Mickey's net worth is somewhere around $9 billion, so the luxury tax really doesn't matter. I mean, at this point, I think everybody's pretty much stated that Ellington was a crucial part of last year's offense, and that's certainly the case. Like, that offense was absolutely anemic at times. Ellington would come in there and provide a burst. There were moments there where Miami's defense was just good enough to kind of hang in there with a slim double-digit deficit, and then Ellington was able to shoot them back into games. But I think, moreover, there's a cultural message that's important here, that for a guy like Ellington to come into Miami, rebuild his game, transform himself into a valuable role player, and then to be compensated appropriately, not just this year, but potentially in the future, that's the kind of message that for a team like Miami that wants to build that kind of consistent message around the league, it's important and maybe even crucial for them to continue to pay their guys. I mean, guys like Tyler Johnson, James Johnson, et cetera, have made a lot of money here in Miami, and that's fine, but you want to continue to reemphasize that with a guy like Wayne, who came in here and is playing on a minimum level contract and then all of a sudden get compensated for more. I think that's important for this Heat.
Rowan mentioned that he'd rather have Ellington over a guy like Lance Stephenson. I heard some people disagree with that. Was I right?
Absolutely.
David, why do you disagree with that? You'd rather have Lance over Wayne Ellington?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Did he say that? I thought the question was whether or not you'd rather have Lance than Wayne Ellington. No, absolutely not.
Rowan, did I not understand what you were saying?
I'm saying I'd rather have Wayne than Lance.
So we all agree on that. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Good. Well, look, everybody on here is poo-pooing the luxury tax, and, you know, I don't care if the owner what the owner is paying for the team. They make enough money in the NBA right now, but the fact is, like, if they get into the tax this year, they're going to enter into the repeater tax in following years, possibly, and that starts to dictate roster decisions, and like we saw with the Heat during the Big Three era, could hurt the locker room. So I think that the luxury tax is something that we have to consider, and there's another move coming. I feel like there's another move coming. I don't get the sense that Mickey Arison really wants to pay the luxury tax, and if they can move off of a Tyler Johnson or a Whiteside, I think they will try. I'm just worried about the asset that has to be attached to that, and hopefully it's not something like a first-round pick or a Justice Winslow or something of that nature. But I'm going to have to give Rowan the win there because of his Wayne over Lance and talking about how reliant the Heat are on him and have been.
Can we get a board update?
Okay, let's do a score update. Rowan's leading by two. Ethan's got one point. Josh has got one. David, you're got a goose egg right now. Come on. All right, we've got.
That's because you've heard these opinions a thousand times before.
They're not interesting to me.
It's not fair. Yeah,
we've got our speed round next after this break. Back on Heating Up, Deion Waiters is back on the court after undergoing ankle surgery in January. How much of a difference does he make for the Heat?
Well, if he's going to be healthy, I mean, that's the first part of this. And my issue about Deion and that contract was, look, there was a reason that he was available for 1 year at $2.7 million in 2016. And, you know, I think we saw a flash over a two-month period the next season where Deion looked like the player that the Cavs thought when they were drafting him. But he has not been consistent in that regard. So the first thing is he has to be healthy. The second thing is they do need his ball handling, his ability to break guys down off the dribble. There's no question. That's why what Dwayne provided last year was so necessary, but he has to make good decisions. You can't have erratic Deion, and you can't have the kind of usage rate that sometimes we see with Deion. So is he important to them? Yes, but again, I would rather them move off of Deion and Tyler Johnson and give the two guard minutes to Josh Richardson and Wayne Ellington. I think this, and then whatever Dwayne's going to provide, perhaps as a backup point guard to Goran. Like, that would be the four-man guard rotation that I would like to see. But if Deion is going to be back, needs to be efficient, needs to get himself healthy first, obviously, and needs to get in shape. Because if you listen to some of the reports and people who've seen him over the past few months, he's not in Miami Heat shape at this stage. And you don't want a situation where he comes to camp not 100% healthy, and then it takes him 2 months to work his way back into shape. So that's going to be really critical for him.
Josh, what are your thoughts on Deion?
Yeah, no, he's a negative asset all around. He's going to make this team worse. I'm going to disagree on him breaking guys down off the dribble. He was second in usage when he was with the team this year and last year. I don't want guys who overrate their abilities, shoot, you know, 40% from the field, 30% from three, being that involved with my team, taking possessions away, you know, from guys both the franchise is more invested in long term and help me win now. So both in Wayne Ellington and Josh Richardson, you know, I don't see a situation where Deion Waiters even really needs to be on the floor that often. I don't think this is a guy that helps that team, and it's unfortunate because I like Deion Waiters, and I think a lot of people really appreciate his style and his moxie, and he's a fun player. But, yeah, he doesn't help you win basketball
moxie.
Games.
Rowan?
Well, I'm biased here, but I'm still a believer in Deion Waiters. Here's what I'll say. I do think that last year in Oklahoma City, it unlocked a little something in Deion, especially during the playoffs. And again, he had that stretch. There have been promising moments for him. I can't pretend that he is a guy that's going to put them over the top or significantly change the calculus of this team. I'm just not willing to say yet that he's a negative asset. There's certainly arguments to be made, you know, in that favor. I do think that having a full, healthy season from him will help a lot. Even that first year in Miami, he had injury issues. If he can get healthy, I do think he can provide something to this team. I think he would have actually been a big help in that Philadelphia series. They kind of needed a bigger body. They needed someone who could defend on the wing. He was defending a lot better during that first year in Miami. So I do think that there are some positives with him. I'm still a believer in him, but he has to get in shape. He has to get back on the same page as the organization. I remember, you know, that first year in Miami, he was having dinners with Spo and Riley almost regularly. Those guys have to stay on top of him. It's a little maybe unfair that those guys have to stay on top of him as much as they do at this point in his career, but I still think there's value to be had from him. You can talk about the contract and whether it was the right decision to give that to him. In the long run, it probably won't be the right decision, but that doesn't mean there isn't utility there. I still think they can get something from him.
David, did the Heat miss Deion Waiters last season?
Oh, absolutely. Look, Rowan, kudos to you for having a sensible opinion unlike the other panelists, but too much waffling on my part for my part there, I think. Look, Waiters was the best thing about this team 2 years ago. He was the impetus behind that 41-41 season and that 31-10 finish. I think he was a huge part of that. Driving to the rim, taking big shots. That's the kind of thing that was missing last year. This offense was just pathetic. Again, like I said earlier, waiting on Wayne Ellington to come and bail you out isn't indicative of a team that should have made the playoffs, to be honest with you. And I think that's why Miami has fallen as much as they have across the country from the perception of fans and media around the league. And Waiters at least gave them an edge, something that was missing. Look, we wanted it from Wade. He comes in and provides those on occasion, but at 36, you can't rely on him to reignite Miami's offense. It's just not catching fire the way it used to. Waiters comes in there with that irrational confidence, and it was exactly what Miami needed at time. He just makes the team fun and better to watch, and I think he makes them better all around, to be honest with you.
People keep saying that Deion didn't play last season. He played 30 games last year, and in that time, he was fifth worst in true shooting percentage among guards who played in at least 30 games and took at least 10 shots per game. That said, the points go to David because he mentioned the entertainment factor, and that is the entire thing with Dion Waiters, and I agree. The teams, it's just a more fun game to watch, for better or worse, but it's just a more entertaining product when Dion's on the floor. So we've got David on the board finally. Here's our final question. So on our weekly Locked On Heat mailbags, we've gotten a lot of questions about Pat Riley's approach to rebuilding this team. What should be the first thing on Riley's priority list right now, David?
Well, 2 weeks ago, this answer would have been very different, but with the best players in free agency all signed elsewhere and the best tradable player now in Toronto, I think it's up to Riley to help make the roster he has now the best it can be. And while a lot of that responsibility falls on Eric Spoelstra's shoulders, I think Riley has to step in and do what he promised at his end-of-season press conference, and that's to help smooth out the relationship between Spoelstra and Hassan Whiteside. Riley's words still carry a lot of weight, and rightfully so, but getting his highest-paid player to work hard and rebuild himself into a dependable and productive version of himself is the key to Miami's success this season. Now, that could mean both wins in the short term, but it also means increasing Whiteside's value if ultimately Riley decides that a trade is still in the team's best interest.
Rowan?
I think it's got to be moving salary. He's still going to move salary. The roster is completely imbalanced. I think that's a big problem with the Heat. You know, Ethan has mentioned this several times. Josh Richardson is a shooting guard, and he's been playing small forward, guarding bigger guys. They need to find a way to clear out some of the salary, clear out some of the space, not only just to balance the roster, but to make sure that guys like Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson are playing at the positions they're going to be for the future, improving those guys. I would personally rather see them move Whiteside than smooth that relationship out. Bam is the future of this team. They need to find a way to get Bam more playing time. Unfortunately, these are tall tasks. The way the money crunch in the league right now is making it so hard for the Heat to move these salaries. But to me, that's still got to be the biggest goal for Riley. He's got to balance out the roster. Even if that means taking out a bad contract or two in return, the way the team is constructed right now, it just doesn't make any sense.
Josh?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna go the other route. You know, Ethan mentioned earlier that there was an opportunity maybe for the Kings to take on Tyler Johnson, and I'm like, the Kings are the Kings, so I'm not gonna rule out anything here. But I just don't think you're moving a guy with 2 years and $38 million on his deal for a couple second rounders. Like I think, you know, Riley made some bad decisions. Like Ethan mentioned, the worst offseason of his career. Ride out these deals. The guys that you're chasing aren't going to be on the market for a few years. Don't give up assets to get rid of a Tyler Johnson, to get rid of a Dion Waiters, to get rid of a James Johnson, whoever it may be. You know, ride this team out. Do what you can do. And I would say focus, like I mentioned earlier, you know, focus on getting a Jimmy Butler. Focus on getting a Kyrie Irving. Get a piece that gets people talking about Miami again, that gets players, you know, interested, that has someone from your camp at these Team USA events, at the All-Star Weekend, putting ideas into people's ears and go that route.
Ethan, do you agree that, like Josh, they should take the long view, or is there something that they got to get done right now?
No, I'm with Rohan on this completely. They need to clear salary and they need to balance the roster. And to me, the Whiteside relationship is not salvageable. It's just not. And you're not rebuilding his value because people around the league are not stupid. I mean, they know. And when somebody like Eric Spoelstra, who has enormous respect from people around the league, have basically decided he's done with a guy. And I just want to tell you, Spo has told me repeatedly, he spent more time with Hassan than with any other player he's coached. Spo put in all of that time with Hassan, and basically Hassan went out publicly criticizing the coach, which you don't do. I mean, again, guys, think about this. You follow the Heat closely. How often has that happened over the past 20 years? Mm-hmm. It does not happen in this organization. They're done with Hassan. Spo is done with Hassan. Now, they'll try to patch it up publicly, but he needs to be cleared out, okay, somehow. Because the other point that was made here is Bam needs those minutes. The Bam Olynyk minutes last year together were very positive. Mm-hmm. If you look on for 100 possessions, they need to get to more of those lineups. They can't get to those lineups while Hassan is there. Like, we talk about balancing the roster. Yes, Tyler's presence is a bit of a problem. But if Tyler doesn't play because Dwayne comes back, it's not an issue. Tyler's not going to create problems. But if Hassan is on the roster and Bam and Olynyk are getting those minutes and then Justice and James Johnson are getting a lot of the minutes at the four, Hassan's going to be a problem, and it's going to be a problem in that locker room. It's corrosive. And again, I was someone who was in favor of them signing that contract with Hassan, but it's played out. It is. I'm just telling you from everything I've heard, it's played out. So he needs, I think by the All-Star break at the latest, they need to find a taker somehow. And frankly, I just don't know how they're going to do it. And one other thing to say, when you guys see certain media members, okay, who tend to be pro-Heat, who have been bashing Hassan lately, that's coming from inside the house. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, have that understanding there, that's kind of where the organization is with him right now. And they're going to try to rehabilitate it publicly because they want to try to move him. But again, you know, unless it's the Kings and they've had Hassan already, mm-hmm. There aren't that many organizations that are going to be fooled by it.
Well, calling out the public relations game and bashing Hassan Whiteside is the quickest way to my heart. So, Ethan, you get the points there, which means we have a tie between Rowan and Ethan. So as our tiebreaker, fellas, give me your case for what the best Heat jersey of all time is. Rowan, I'll start with you.
You know what? I'm just going to concede here right away.
Whoa!
Because Ethan has been someone who I've looked up to for a long time. I'm so happy he's back providing for South Florida sports fans. As much as I love to cover the NBA, I'm still a fan at heart. It's so cool to have five reasons and see what they're doing. I'm excited about that network. I'm excited about everything Ethan's doing. So it's my honor to let him win this game show, this nameless game.
Wait, Rohan, you do realize that Navas works with me, right? Don't be so quick to compliment me on what I'm doing with Five Reasons when I have Johnny at the head of one of my podcasts. So I appreciate it, but you might want to reconsider that.
Does anybody have a case for what the number one Heat jersey of all, or are we just going to ignore my question completely?
To me, the number one Heat jersey of all time is the original jersey. I like the throwback. I don't.
The black.
Yes, okay. I don't know. I mean, now they have 8 of them. They 8, 10, 12, 15, L Heat. Why is it L Heat, by the way? Well, shouldn't it be like, if it's going to go with L, shouldn't Heat be in Spanish too? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't it be like El Calor, El Caliente? I don't understand that. So to me, I go with the original with the throwback. I did like the Vice jerseys. I will admit that I did like those, but a lot of the recent ones, some of the back and black ones, and I'm not a huge fan.
So no, the dark days of Heat jerseyness or whatever was the whiteout jerseys, the all white, and then the blackout jerseys and the all black. Those were dark days.
Heat Strong was by far the worst.
Oh, that was a bad one.
Yes, that was bad.
All right. Well, congratulations to Ethan Skolnick. That's all we have for today. Thank you to our guest. Again, Ethan, founder of the 5 Reasons Sports Network. Rowan Nadkarni, writer for Sports Illustrated's The Crossover. Josh Eberle, writer for Hoop Mag. And, of course, my Locked On Heat co-host, David Ramil. You can find where to follow them on all in the podcast show notes. We'll list it there. I'm Wes Goldberg, and this has been Heating Up. We'll catch you next time.
He's heating up!